If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And so that's what I did. I opened up an account. I don't think many teenagers decide they're going to take their camp counselor money and move it into a into stocks.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Josh is a multifamily syndicator who specializes in helping investors use their retirement funds to passively invest. Through his company, Waldemain, Josh provides all the tips and tricks needed to invest quickly, safely, and inexpensively with an existing retirement account.
Hey, Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam Hanks. Thanks for having me.
Man, this is awesome. Glad that you're here and want to just jump in really and hear your story of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there.
Yeah. So the story of how I started, I just kind of a quick overview of myself. Sam's already mentioned in the intro, but you know, I do retirement accounts. And so my story actually starts, oddly enough, with a retirement account at 16 years old. I opened my first Roth IRA when I was 16. My grandfather and my mother were CPAs, and they both suggested that I start looking out for my future. And so that's what I did. I opened up an account. I don't think many teenagers decide they're going to take their camp counselor money and move it into a into stocks. But yeah, I figured I was, oh, you did the same thing too? That's awesome. That's great. I highly suggest it. It's really, it's been super fruitful in terms of, you know, getting me, catapulting me along the right path. And so, you know, I decided I was going to start looking out for the future. I figured at the time I would probably be paying higher taxes at some point than when I earned, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 for the summer. So I put in a Roth account and I just started growing it from there. And I've been contributing to it ever since. It's grown pretty significantly and I've been using it to invest in real estate now. And then going forward about 10 years after that, my grandfather and my mother actually, they ended up passing away, unfortunately. But what that did was it left me with, they were nice enough to leave me their retirement accounts. They left what they had earned in their 401ks and IRAs. And it wasn't a life-changing amount. But it was enough that I needed to make sure that I was going to be a good steward of their legacy and make sure that I was putting their, as I mentioned, like life work into action. And so sure. That's kind of how I jumped into real estate, because I knew I needed to do something with those accounts. I knew I wanted to have more control over them. I figured out how I was going to actually, I made a plan for that. And I went into all the education. That's what led me to the space.
Got it. So walk us through that process.
Yeah. So it was pretty grueling. It took me 2 years or so to figure out all the little details and nuances. You know, you can quickly in just a couple of hours find out the basics of what you want to do. But until you start networking and contacting the right people and asking the right questions and learning about the things that you need to know, because there's in real estate, there's so much that you don't know about to ask. You don't know the questions that are there that you need to ask them. And so once you start learning about the topic, you go, okay, how does this pertain to, you know, how I'm going to approach something? So a lot of that process, you know, going to the right seminars, finding the right meetups and hearing the right things, and then kind of wrapping my mind around all of that and building out the picture of what I was going to do with my retirement accounts. And so I ended up, once I had all of that, I realized that no one was in the space really telling the full picture. Most people in the retirement account industry they're geared towards opening accounts for other people, and they're custodians themselves. They hold the money. And so when they pitch the idea and they pitch, you know, educational concepts, it's kind of like 3/4 of the picture. It's enough to give you the information of what you need to be looking out for, but not enough, you know, to understand really what are your total options. And so as an investor myself, and having implemented the self-directed accounts and used the funds across many deals, I now have an idea of what to do as an investor. So that's what I'm trying to pass along to other folks, educate them on it, and bring them along into investments that fit their retirement accounts.
Gotcha. So are you out actually finding the deals, or are you more on the education side?
I'm on both. You know, I originally came into it on the education side because it was so natural for me. I have a background of my family have some educators my two sisters and my grandfather were educators. And so I went into it knowing, hey, I have all this information. I should probably just pass it along. And then at the same time, I was, you know, looking for deals, and I am a multifamily operator. And then I realized that it was a good opportunity for me to start looking for deals, you know, purely for retirement investors, things that align perfectly for retirement accounts, because, you know, most deals are fruitful for retirement accounts, but there are just a select few that really shine and really make sure that a retirement investor is getting the most out of what they're trying to do.
What's a deal like that look like?
Yeah, so we can get into a bit, but there's some taxes involved if you use a self-directed IRA. And if you do that, then you need to be aware of the taxes. The taxes are called UBIT, Unrelated Business Income Tax. And I actually built what I believe is the industry's first UBIT calculator because I really wanted a clear understanding of what the tax would look like. A lot of people just kind of talk about it vaguely and say, yeah, you should look into it yourself.
Right,
and they don't
right.
give you an idea of how impactful that might actually be. So
right.
my analytical background, I actually wanted to go dig into it. So I built an Excel spreadsheet that took me a while and figured out what those taxes look like. So the running a bunch of deals through it has kind of built a picture in my mind of what the optimal deal is going to be. And what I look out for are opportunities where it's a value add opportunity and we're looking for, you know, a property, a multifamily property that's going to be able to, we can come into it with bridge debt and then we can refinance in, let's say, 2 or 3 years. And with that, because there's no capital event on a refinance and you're just returning the original capital back to the investor, there's actually no taxes on a return of capital. So the investor can have their funds back into their IRA earlier before it's ever taxed, and then they can move it into a second investment and kind of get the compounding effect going there before they have to pay the UBIT. You know, if a deal's holding time is, let's say, 5 years, the big tax is going to come in that fifth year when you sell or you refi at a large proceed level. But if you refi early and it's, you know, it's below your initial capital balance and you get that money back, you can start to kind of get into 2 or 3 deals before you ultimately have to pay that big bill. And so being able to keep the IRR high for our investors is really key in, you know, minimizing the impact of you. But you can't avoid it altogether, but you can minimize it.
Right. Is that calculator something that you share or is that proprietary, Josh, data?
So I'm figuring out how to try to market it a bit, but it's essentially a large Excel spreadsheet with 48 different data points I have to put in every single time I run it. So right now it's a complex thing to run, but so basically what I do is I share it with my investors for, you know, every time I give them an offering, I'm able to offer them the earnings that they expect as well as the expected taxes. So that's sort of how I've been using it going, you know, so far.
Right. Well, when you get that dumbed down to my level, please, please let us know. I'd be happy to buy it and use it. But 48 data points sounds like a lot. So what you say that the deals are interesting because they are deals that fit the bill are ones that you either take bridge debt out initially and then refinance, you know, say earlier on in the project. Is that always the flow?
So no, there are deals that are actually, they work if they're just a standard, you go in with agency debt and you run a 5-6 year hold. It could be longer too, but those ones really have to be lower leverage. We're talking something that's 72, 73 at the highest, you know, 70% leverage loan to value and things like that. That allows you to have less tax to pay because the tax is only paid on that leverage portion. So the less leverage you have, the better for a retirement investor. So if I see a deal come across that's going to be 85% leverage to get, you know, to pull off the right returns, it's just not something that shakes out.
Got it. Now that's a new piece of information, not one I had tucked away, which is you pay tax on the levered amount. Now I understood so let's assume that there's no leverage, right? Let's assume we just buy it all with cash. Is there still UBIT?
Not at all. No, there is no tax if you're just paying in cash. Like if you're just buying a property, a rental property, a single family home or a duplex that you can afford with the cash balance in your account, you're totally fine. There's nothing involved there. But if you are taking out leverage, and it has to be a non-recourse loan, which is why multifamily works really well, in my opinion, because or commercial in general, because you know all commercial loans tend to be non-recourse. If there is outside debt outside right. of your tax deferred dollars, if you're bringing in loans from a bank, you have to pay tax on the income generated by the loan.
Right. So what if it's recourse? What happens then?
Well, I'll just stop you there because if it's recourse, a retirement account can't get invested in it.
Right. So here's a question. So you put your money in with a syndicator. Here's a hypothetical situation. You put your money in with a syndicator. They propose a certain debt structure, right? Then something goes awry. That debt does not work out. And they end up getting a different debt structure of which you have no control over, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just that's the way the chips fell. And they got a different debt scenario going on because they couldn't find financing the original way. And now it's recourse debt. what do you do as an investor that's already part of that deal?
You'd have to sell immediately. What the IRS is looking for is if you're acting in good faith. And so if it's something where you were a passive investor, they want to see you take action within 12 months to avoid penalties. And really, it's not the full 12 months. It's immediately. If as soon as you are made aware of the situation, if you're in a situation that provides a prohibited transaction, which is what that would be for a retirement account, if you start to take action to sell your, you know, your shares to get out of that investment, then they find it acceptable. I should mention you can't sell it to yourself. So you couldn't come in and, you know, buy it out from your retirement account.
Sure.
But as long as you try to get that retirement account out, there's not going to be any penalties. They just want you to behave properly.
Gotcha. Now that's interesting. That's interesting. So there's a lot of things to keep track of there. When you go out and look for active, I know you said, you know, you guys are investing in multifamily. When you go out and look for those, how do you know which ones you can lever correctly to meet kind of your criteria? I mean, because now you've got a whole new set of underwriting and deal specific criteria that maybe everybody else doesn't have. So it seems like, you know, especially multifamily right now, when finding deals is tough, now you've got another layer of complexity to it. How do you overcome that?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, I've been, deal flow is high right now, and I've been going through a lot of deals that just, they look great on the surface, and they just don't work for the investors I'm bringing to the table. They look great for my partners who are just bringing cash investors. But, you know, what we really have to do is we take a look at two different things. We look at the structure that will provide us with the anticipated returns that we want to bring. You know, we typically try to provide a 2x return within 5 years before taxes in any situation, something like that. Sure. And so we take a look at what we can offer and what kind of leverage is needed to pull that off. And then we also talk to our loan broker or lender who gets us an idea of what terms are available for that property in the current time in that market. And with that, we're able to see roughly what it's going to look like, if bridge will be available to us, if it's just a straight agency debt, if mezzanine is going to come into play, all of those things. And once we get a picture on it, we can kind of see if we want to put an LOI down or move into it, you know, into due diligence and go further.
Gotcha. So are you guys taking on only retirement account investors in your syndications?
So myself, I cater to retirement investors. I'm not exclusive to retirement investors. I have investors who use retirement funds, they use cash funds on other deals. You know, it's just, it's a place where I happen to specialize. I happen to have an understanding, and I can move, you know, folks' their money into, you know, investments that I've been able to identify as good for them.
Gotcha. That's interesting. That's fascinating. What else can you tell us about retirement account investing? Like some things you've learned along the way. We've talked a little bit about some things to look out for. We've talked about kind of how UBIT is calculated, and someday you're going to sell a calculator, which I'm excited about. What else can you tell us that you've learned over the years? Because I know you've uncovered a whole lot more information on this topic.
Yeah, there's a couple things where a lot of us, you know, if we're investing, so as a retirement investor, you have to invest passively. I should mention this up front because you can't have any involvement in any of the deals. So if you're a general partner, if you're running a deal or you're flipping a house, you actually can't use your retirement funds if you're going to be actively working on that property.
Right.
So, you know, if we're talking about just passively investing, you need to be aware of who you can and can't invest alongside with. When it comes to passive investing, you know, a lot of the times I want to invest maybe with my wife or my dad. Those are two people you actually can't use your retirement funds alongside. They're considered disqualified persons. And so anyone in a linear ascendant or descendant fashion, so parents, grandparents, children, grandchildren, they're not allowed, as well as spouses at any level. You can do your brothers and sisters, they're fine. Your aunts and uncles are all okay. But anyone that is kind of close in your immediate family, you can't use your retirement accounts with. But the way I am able to get around that, and the thing that I was able to find out, is if everyone gets involved with their retirement accounts, you know, disqualified people are the people. They're not the retirement accounts. And so if my dad wants to come into an opportunity with his retirement account, and I also want to invest passively with my retirement account, we can both get involved in the same deal. We can both invest passively. So we can, I do this with my wife, I do that with my family. And so we're able to kind of create a holding company and really pull all our funds together. You know, if an investment minimum is $75,000 and there's three people in the account, in the LLC, we're able to come in at a $25,000 personal level and further diversify our accounts into more, you know, network and more markets or more asset classes, whatever, you know, you want to diversify along, you can do that at a lower level. And as long as everyone's in it with a retirement account, you're perfectly fine to do that.
Right. And you guys, all three of you, would pool into one LLC that would put then invest. It's more like a fund to funds model where you guys would then invest in another syndication. But none of you three would necessarily have control of the, none of you would be controlling members of the deal. You'd all be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, you got to be prepared to do some more, some extra legwork. I'm sure there's a point at, you know, which you have to have a certain amount of money to make that, you know, the juice on that worth the squeeze, really. I mean,
yeah, if you are already, you know, if you've already got a lawyer who's setting up maybe family LLCs for, you know, maybe your operating side, if you're an active investor or whatever, yeah, you got to consider the accounting fees that'll come alongside with that. And the reason that I personally advocate for checkbook control is because of the costs. Make sure it's worth the squeeze. You know, a lot of custodian accounts, it can be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars a year because they really try to ramp up the fees. They're trying to make money.
Right.
With a checkbook account, it can be as low as $135 a year. You know, you just pay a wire fee every time you want to execute a deal. And so I'm looking for opportunities where I know I'm not going to have a lot of overhead. My returns go straight to my account, not to somebody else.
Right.
And I can maximize my returns that way.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. You bring up checkbook control because that's certainly a widely contested topic. You know, some people say, no, you can't do it. You know, some custodians will say, you know, that's completely illegal. And others are like, man, this is the only way to go. And to do it any other way is foolish. So talk to us a little bit about how you finally said, man, I'm worth gambling, or it's worth gambling and having checkbook control.
Yeah. So I gave a presentation a few weeks ago and I had somebody walk up to me after and he said, you know, my custodian told me checkbook control is illegal. And
right.
I was like, yeah, your custodian's trying to scare you because they want to make sure you're keeping your funds with them.
Right.
It's totally, absolutely legal. The structure of how it works essentially is you're always going to have to move your money into a custodian. That's a given.
Sure.
But at the same time, you're using an outside source, a company, or there are some custodians who actually will do this for you. They'll end up opening an LLC for you. And the only true investment the custodian account makes is into the LLC.
Sure.
And the LLC, you can then manage yourself just like any other business, open up a business or a checking account. And so the only thing here is you don't have to have someone holding your hand. You don't have to get every deal approved by a custodian. If you're concerned with, you know, making sure you're getting involved in the right deals, there are certain companies that will provide advisory and consulting services on every transaction you do. And you can call them up and say, hey, this is a little outside of the norm of what I do. Is this prohibited? Is it allowed? What kind of, you can ask them the questions that pertain to that particular investment. But outside of that, if you're learning the basics and you know the basics and you're getting involved in the same, especially if you're passively investing in multifamily, you're investing in the same types of deals every time, there isn't a lot you have to look out for, and you can go ahead and take control of your funds and do it yourself, and you don't have much to worry about at all.
Right, right. Yeah, I've have experience with both of those approaches, and I will say the checkbook control side is far easier and faster to fund than the ones that I have in other custodians. Sometimes those are 2 weeks, and you're right, the fees will eat you alive. On a per deal basis, you're looking at it going, gosh, it's going to cost me at year end $800 to $1,000 just to get this paper shuffled and the deal funded. So, I mean, that adds up quick.
Yeah,
if your investment's only $50,000 into the deal, well, there went your first 2% right off the top.
Exactly. And a lot of places they'll charge based on the account balance. So as you do a good job and you find the right investments and your account grows, they're going to start taking more and more and more. So,
right. Let's avoid that. Let's avoid that. Josh, I've enjoyed this conversation today. I really want to jump into the final four and just hear what you have to say about those things. You know, the first question is, if you were to distill everything you know, in this case, we'll hold it as it pertains to self-directed account investing. If you were to distill everything you know as it pertains to self-directed investing, and you were going to give that or give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
It comes down to education. I know a lot of people who approach this topic think that they're scared to jump in because it looks really daunting, like there's a lot of pieces involved. Personally, what I've tried to do is distill this down into simple lessons. On my website, I have 6 videos that total 30 minutes. And if you go through those, they'll teach you A to Z what you need to know, and you're going to be on your way. In my opinion, it's like riding a bike. So we start with training wheels, and it looks a little crazy at first, but then once you take the training wheels off, it comes naturally to you going forward. And in my mind, I really operate my retirement funds similarly to cash. I have what I can and can't do in my head quickly. You know, I know what I can and can't do, and then I just move on from there, and I fund my investments as I choose.
Gotcha. What's one thing you're doing, rather, to stay on top of your game?
I try. It's difficult sometimes, especially around holidays, but I try to meditate every morning and have some sort of a morning routine. When I ended up doing that, I try to implement part of the miracle morning process. It really ended up benefiting the rest of my day. It put me right on the right path, and I've been a lot more productive as a result.
Right. No, that's awesome. What when it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning, my mother passed away about 4 or 5 years ago, and she passed away from ALS. And so what my family and I do, because it's a disease that really affected us, every kind of large event or, you know, opportunity we have, we try to donate to them and make sure that, you know, gifts are given in, you know, the name of ALS and everything. So it's just our cause that we care about right now.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Research into that is super important. I know that's one we don't really understand yet. So
absolutely.
That's great. Josh, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you?
Yeah, as I mentioned, my website has tons of information. You can reach out to me at josh@walltomain.com. But if you go to my website, then I do have a free PDF I'm currently offering. It's the top 10 tips and tricks when investing in multifamily with your retirement account. And so I give all the little bits of information, things I wasn't able to cover here, and a couple of things that I was. And hopefully you can maximize your account using that.
Right. And we'll put that website in the show notes. But what is that website, just so we can hear it on audio?
walltomain.com.
You may have already said that. I apologize. Okay. No worries. Hey, Josh, thanks so much for coming on today. Do appreciate your time and your insight. And I look forward to doing it again here sometime soon.
Thanks a lot, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.